Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. As we approach the end of the school year, tensions appear to be building. North Carolina teachers recently dropped three spots to 46th in the nation for both teacher pay and per pupil spending. The state hasn't passed a budget, and teacher raises are hanging in the balance. That fact and those rankings, along with feelings that education is being devalued here, led teachers from across the state to descend on Raleigh last Friday for yet another march to prod the legislature to take positive action. Closer to home, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board took the rare move of rejecting Superintendent Crystal Hill's proposed $2.1 billion budget. They charged her with returning in 2 weeks with a new plan, but gave her little, if any, instruction. That resulted in this back and forth between Hill and School Board Chair Stephanie Sneed.
I guess we will bypass our 11-day rule because for the May 12th board meeting, materials are due this Friday. So I just want to be clear that we have a $2.1 billion budget. I do not have clarity on what exactly needs to be amended.
Dr. Hill.
I do not feel comfortable taking that direction outside of a board action.
So we will address whatever meetings there will be, not tonight, and you will get direction.
The board then met in what was supposed to be an open session early Saturday morning, but quickly closed that session so members could discuss personnel matters. Hill was only in attendance for part of that meeting, and there will be an additional meeting today. This hour, we hear about teacher frustration about what they hope to accomplish with last Friday's march and the wrangling at CMS over the budget. WFAE senior editor Eli Portillo is with us along with Liz Schlemmer. She's an education reporter for WUNC. And to start us off with a primer on teacher tensions and teachers' hopes for change, Tamika Walker-Kelly is here. She is president of the North Carolina Association of Educators. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Tamika, I'm going to begin with you because I'm going to lose you soon in the program. And ahead of last Friday's march in Raleigh, Senate leader Phil Berger said teachers were refusing, quote, to work on a day they are supposed to work. That does not sound like he was on board with your efforts. Do you believe that you moved the needle with him or other lawmakers?
Well, educators came to downtown Raleigh and we took a day on to advocate for our schools and our students and our profession. And we absolutely moved the needle with our community. They are engaged and energized and ready to continue discussions with their lawmakers and back home in their communities in order to elevate our message, which we carried on Friday, is that we want our lawmakers to invest in our students and schools over corporations and wealthy donors.
Is the purpose of these marches really to rally the teachers, make them feel better about themselves, make them feel like they're having an impact? Is it a marketing a ploy to get parents to recognize the problems and the struggles that teachers face? Or do you really think that you'll move the legislature?
Well, anytime that we gather educators, parents, students, and community members, we are using it as an educational opportunity to elevate the real critical needs of our public school students and educators, and also to inform the public about what is happening in our public schools and who the change makers should be. Our lawmakers across the aisle should be investing in the success of our public schools. And we have not yet seen that, as you mentioned earlier. We are dropping to 46th in educator pay. We are 50th dead last in the nation around public school funding effort. And so we need to do better for our schools and our students.
The Charlotte Observer quoted one parent from this area who was on your side. She said, quote, "I don't think the march is selfish. People weren't paying attention before, so it had to be something disruptive. It had to say, this is so big that teachers are willing to give up their day and go into Raleigh and march about it." Do you agree? Are legislators not paying attention, or is something else at work? Is it more than that?
Well, it is both a lack of paying attention to the real needs in our schools, and it is also a lack of political will from our Republican lawmakers. We continue to see North Carolina schools fall further and further behind, even our peers in the Southeast, such as South Carolina and Virginia. And we cannot continue to make North Carolina number one for business if we continue to fall and race to the bottom in the pack around public education.
More and more, we're hearing about teachers, particularly in urban districts like Charlotte, perhaps in Wake County as well, being unable to afford rent. They're living in their cars. Some of them are taking second, maybe third jobs. Is that primarily in these urban areas where the cost of living is substantially higher than perhaps it is in rural areas, or is this happening all over the state, Tamika?
This is an issue that we are experiencing across the board. Educators taking two or three jobs in order to be able to pay rent, to buy groceries, to pay electric bills. And the cost of being an educator continues to be much higher, especially when educators are coming out of their pocket. North Carolina teachers are spending the top in the nation for buying supplies and materials for the classroom. And so that kind of model is unsustainable for public education in North Carolina. And we need our lawmakers to make that difference in order to restore respect and prestige to our profession.
If you had to use one or two words or a phrase to talk about how teachers feel about the working conditions they face and the reasons for those working conditions, what would that be? What would that phrase be?
To quote one of our speakers at the program, our educators are tired, but they are tough. They have worked continuously. They love their students, they love their career, and now they want our lawmakers, other constituents, other community members to continue to show that love with action and advocacy for our public schools.
The living wage in Mecklenburg County is around $53,100, according to the MIT Living Wage Calculator. Starting teacher salaries here, however, are $48,900. Do the math. It doesn't work. Aside from the personal impact on teachers, what's the effect of that on education and our ability to attract and keep the best teachers? And are we setting up our schools for failure by not dealing with this situation?
Well, if we don't address the teacher recruitment and retention crisis that we have experienced in North Carolina for the past several years, it will ultimately affect our students, their academic achievement, and their growth. We continue to see educators, like I said, go to other states, but some people are leaving the profession altogether, and our students are experiencing bigger class sizes, 30, 40 students in a classroom, long-term substitutes in a classroom where they should have a highly qualified, well-compensated professional. And so ultimately, our students pay the price for inaction by our lawmakers on public education in our schools.
The Charlotte Observer this morning published some of the results from a survey, the North Carolina Teacher Working Conditions Survey, which alludes to the fact that the teachers are underpaid and some of them are facing the reality of possibly having to leave the profession. It says these comments, this is a quote from the survey, these comments suggest that compensation is not viewed only as an individual financial issue, but also as a broader working condition that affects whether educators feel valued and whether schools can attract and retain experienced teachers. If this were happening in private in the private sector, that would ring alarm bells.
It absolutely would. If we were seeing an exodus of doctors or lawyers or nurses or police officers or firefighters, it would cause a crisis and motivate people to action. And in order to even do all of those jobs, you need an educator. And so we should be investing in our public schools with the same gusto as we would any other industry, because that is the workforce that we are developing for the future of North Carolina. But these are the individuals who have dedicated their time, their talent, and their careers in order to shape the future of our entire state.
Liz, how does pay ranking compare to other urban or rural districts around the country? We're 46, but what does that mean? How do we compare to Virginia? How do we compare to South Carolina? How do we compare to Tennessee, the neighboring states?
I mean, I think Tamika might know the numbers for the neighboring
Okay.
states. Specifically, we're the lowest of any state that borders North Carolina. Some of the states that are lower are, I believe, Missouri, Idaho, places where I think of as having a lower cost of living. But of all of our, directly surrounding states, I think we're the lowest in teacher pay.
And
And
I
I know
said we're,
NCAE had a graphic on that, so maybe Tamika knows some of those numbers off the top of her head.
I mean, we're 46th in teacher pay, we're 46th in per pupil spending. And if you figure in inflation, teachers are earning 5% less today than they did 10 years ago. And Tamika, you say that this year, North Carolina is the only state in the country where average teacher salaries are projected to decrease. Is that the case, even if this budget with pay raises in it passes ultimately?
That is correct. In order to even restore significant buying power to educators in our state, we need to raise our educator salaries at least by 20%. And we're calling NCAE for 25% with our Kids Over Corporation campaign. Because if we were to invest the dollars that we pass along to corporations through tax breaks or to wealthy donors, we would be able to invest more than $3 billion back into our schools every single year. And so we know that when our educators go to South Carolina or Virginia, they're earning at least $10,000 more for the same amount of experience in their classrooms. And so, North Carolina, we are charging our lawmakers to do better.
So, Eli, Senate Leader Phil Berger says that everyone is in agreement that to the extent that we have the capacity, these are his words, we need to work on paying teachers more and funding education at a higher level. Well, seems like everything's hunky-dory. Everybody's on the same page here. But he also favors tax cuts. And that is why the North Carolina Association of Educators dubbed this rally over the week, or last Friday, as the Kids Over Corporations campaign. If those cuts go through, those tax cuts as scheduled, the corporate tax rate would go to zero. So are we likely to see more cuts in education because of that?
Well, I think we're likely to see a shift in who is asked to pay. We are also already seeing this at the county level. Remember, the bulk of schools' funding comes from the state, but then counties supplement that. And we're seeing a lot of pressures around funding from counties. Property taxes in Mecklenburg are projected to increase in many of the surrounding areas, and schools are driving a lot of that. So as the state kind of says, look, we'd love to pay more, but we're stretched and we can't do it right now, counties are being asked to fund higher teacher pay. That comes from property taxes, and we're seeing pushback. For example, Cabarrus County, they had a 13, almost $14 million budget deficit. They've asked the schools to restrain their growth, and they just said they're not going to be able to give the schools as much as the schools are asking for. So, you multiply that times 100 counties, a little more than that, school districts, and I think that's a preview of what we're going to see more and more in the coming years.
Yeah, the counties are picking up the slack, and yet even now, the legislature is discussing the possibility of a property tax cap on counties, which is where they get their money to pay for all the things that the state is not paying for. We have 30 seconds, Tamika. Teachers don't go into this profession to get rich, but was it always this bad? And if not, when did it start? I have 30 seconds.
Well, we've seen the decline since the Republican takeover in 2017, 2018, even before then, 2013. And it's going to make a difference who we elect to our state legislature. But ultimately, education is a community issue. It shouldn't be political or partisan, and everybody should invest in it.
Tamika Kelly is the president of the North Carolina Association of Educators. Thank you for being with us this morning. We'll continue when we come back with Liz Schlemmer from WUNC and Eli Portillo. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about education and educators, the march in Raleigh last Friday, and ultimately what's going on with CMS and their wrangling over their own budget, which took a little heated move on last week during their meeting with the superintendent. Eli Portillo is with us. He's executive editor for WFAE News, and Liz Schlemmer is an education reporter for WUNC. Before we move on to Charlotte, let's talk a little bit more about this march. When schools close, Liz, when teachers go to these marches, schools have to shut down because most of the teachers have gone to Raleigh, and that's what many systems around the state, including Mecklenburg County and Gaston County and others in this area, did on Friday. Parents have to make alternative arrangements, and that can be difficult for some parents because they can't find daycare and they have to not go to work themselves to stay home and take care of the kids. Do we know what kind of impact that has on support for these teachers? Parents may be supporting them, but by gosh, now you've hurt me.
I mean, you can certainly look at social media comments and you'll see, you know, a range of reactions to this march. There are folks who support it. There are folks who say, okay, but could they have done this on a Saturday? And then others who would defend that and say, well, if you did it on a Saturday, it wouldn't get everyone's attention, would it?
And I know that teacher strikes are illegal in North Carolina. This was not a strike per se, but how is it different?
Well, I think in a real formal strike, a union is trying to negotiate its contract. It might be going out for continued days or until their demands are met. This is a one-time demonstration. Also, the teachers who did leave, did walk out of school, asked for leave for that. You know, they were using their own paid leave to do that, as opposed to a strike where they're simply walking out. I can also say that I've covered, an unofficial wildcat strike before when I was reporting in Kentucky, and they didn't tell people they were going to do it. You know, it was like every morning we would wake up, the whole city would wake up and wonder whether or not school was going to happen that day, and parents were figuring it out at 7 a.m. This was a very organized, concerted effort and a push to try to get school districts and school boards to make these decisions in advance so that at least families would know. Some of those families didn't know until the week of, but it's a little different than waking up and going, do we have school or not?
Eli, I mentioned before Tamika had to leave us that Phil Berger says that he wants to work on paying teachers more. And there is, in fact, a teacher pay raise in the as yet to be passed budget. But the the educators who went to Raleigh dubbed this the Kids Over Corporations campaign, alluding to the fact that sales of that tax cuts are in the pipeline for the future. And that will take the corporate tax to zero, which they believe will affect education. Isn't it in the best interest of corporations to want to pay into the education system, or at least for the state to have a solid education system so that they have a workforce of graduates who know how to do what they do?
Well, that's a philosophical question. I think you could definitely make an argument that, yes, that's better for long-term growth of the state, long-term economic health. But, there's also plenty of large companies that are, multinationals that answer to shareholders around the world. And, it's nice if they're civic-minded and they would like to pay into the education system. But ultimately, they are not viewing it through that lens. I think that you're going to see a lot more wrangling over this idea of how much taxes can be raised to make up for that. You mentioned last segment the proposed cap on how counties can raise property taxes, how much counties and municipalities can raise property taxes. That seems likely to be on the ballot in November as a constitutional question. And, that is a further constraint to it. So you really have the balloon being squeezed at both ends. You have corporate tax rates set to go down There are triggers set to lower that, as you said, to zero. And then you also have this potential squeeze on county property taxes, which are the other main lever for teacher pay here. So I think that's one reason you're seeing teachers so concerned, is they're looking ahead a few years and saying, this is already bad. The money is not necessarily growing and might even be shrinking. How much worse can it get?
Liz, I believe I'm correct in saying that you were at that march on Friday. Is that correct? You were there. And you spoke while you were there to several teachers. What did they share with you about their personal situations?
Yeah, some of the things that were striking to me were the number of teachers who were telling me about their second or third jobs. A third job might be a summer job as well. There was a pair of teachers that really stuck out in my mind. They had come from Iredell County and Gaston County. They did know each other. They met at the rally. And one of them said, my mom still buys all my school supplies for me. And I said, well, you don't look like you're 20 years old, right? And she said, no, I'm 45 and my mom still buys all my school supplies for me. And her friend that she had just met said, I moved from Greenville, South Carolina to Gaston County, and I took about a $25,000 pay cut to do that. She said she fell in love with another teacher. That's why she moved to the state, and she wasn't getting paid for the same level of education that she was paid for in South Carolina.
We hear a lot about teachers having to buy supplies for the classroom. And if they don't buy those supplies, the classroom doesn't have those supplies. And this one teacher that you spoke about, where her mother is buying the supplies because she can't afford to on her teacher's salary. How common is that? Is that, would you say it's 50% of the teachers, 75% of the teachers, a tiny portion of the teachers?
Where, I mean, I've never, you know, run a formal survey on that. I know, like Tamika was referencing, there are surveys that North Carolina teachers are spending more out of pocket than teachers in other states. You also see online fundraisers to fund teachers' classroom supplies. You see nonprofits stepping in to try to fund that, because it's something that actually was a line item in our state budget. And isn't any longer. I think that was cut maybe around the Great Recession.
So if teachers don't buy it, or in this case, if the teacher's mother doesn't buy these supplies, the classroom goes without?
Presumably, or you know, that there are some classrooms that don't have the same resources as others, depending on whether or not they have that extra support.
Do parents know this?
I mean, I think parents are aware of the supply list that they're asked to to help support. I did a story on that before, that, you know, supply lists are getting longer and longer in North Carolina because parents are being asked to bring in, you know, not just their own child's crayons and paper, but also cleaning supplies for the classroom, snacks for the classroom. You know, it's just growing and growing.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a student at CMS right now, and you know, we love our school and our teacher. But yeah, I will say as a parent, it is, I mean, it kind of surprised me when we started that they were like, hey, can you buy like wipes for the desks and goldfish for the class and construction paper and art supplies? And, you know, I mean, yes, but I was also, as a first timer, kind of like, oh, really? I thought that's what the school budget was for. I didn't realize I was buying the Clorox wipes.
Yeah, the local school districts also are funded by the state in part based on their level of attendance, the enrollment. And enrollment at CMS, at least, is on decline, and it may be on decline in other parts of the state. Is that because the school age population is declining, or is it because opportunity scholarships are siphoning off students from the public schools to private schools?
Well, you are seeing more students in in private schools and charter schools. You are also, I know birth rates peaked like two decades ago and have been going down since. In CMS, what that looks like is for most of the last decade, the district had around 147,000 students. This coming year, it's projected to have about 139,000 students, so a decline of roughly 8,000 or so, which means smaller allotments, and especially at schools that are seeing more pronounced enrollment declines than the average. Maybe that's because more people have moved out of that neighborhood. Maybe that's because more people are choosing to pull schools, kids from schools that have fairly or not established poor reputations. Those schools that are seeing greater declines than the average, I think, are being hit particularly hard with decreases in teacher allotment and per pupil, and the spending per student.
So if partial funding of the schools is tied to the enrollment at that schools, as the enrollment goes down, Liz, are things likely to get more dire for these teachers and these individual schools?
Yeah, I think it makes it really hard to work out the budget for a school district when they see declining enrollment, because, you know, they're seeing it in little pockets at all of their elementaries, and that's kind of harder to deal with. It's something that we're seeing in Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools right now, where they're looking at school consolidation. I think we're hearing this from some rural counties as well. And what happens is, okay, you lost some kids from this elementary and this elementary and this elementary, and you end up having class sizes that are even lower than our state required class sizes. And the state doesn't fund the teachers at those levels. So you can have a class with that ends up with 11 kids in it, and the state's not paying for that teacher. You need to kind of consolidate the classes so that you're maximizing the efficiency of your state funds. And I mean, that's why I think we're gonna start seeing more and more pushes for school consolidations. Is this happening for you, Eli? Are you watching that?
Yeah, in Catawba County, our education reporter, James Farrell, has been reporting on the proposed merger of the county schools with the two smaller school districts. I think it's Hickory and Newton Conover. And, you know, that will affect about 23,000 students, I think, as those three districts are consolidated into one. One other point I wanted to bring up, because it is budget season right now and you're hearing a lot about property taxes. We just had the Charlotte municipal property tax and budget presentation last night here. There are a lot of teachers. So increasing teacher pay is mathematically just harder than some of these other local public pay increases you're hearing about. For example, here in Charlotte, the city is proposing raising property taxes to give firefighters a 7% raise and police a 10% raise. There's about 2,600 police officers and firefighters in Charlotte. For CMS teachers, there's around 9,000. So when you're talking about funding public employee raises largely out of local property taxes, I think that's one thing that gets lost sometimes, is there are generally a lot more teachers than other local public employees. It's usually, I believe, the biggest group.
So let's shift our focus to Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, Eli. Last week, in a rare move, the school board rejected Superintendent Dr. Crystal Hill's proposed $2.1 billion budget. It caught Hill off guard, and the exchange between her and the school board chair, Stephanie Sneed, that we played at the very beginning of this program indicated a little friction. Was that real or imagined or just in the moment? Is there something going on here?
Well, I should note that I'm not an education reporter. I do pretend to be one on the radio sometimes. but our education reporter, James Farrell, he covered that meeting, and then I covered the follow-up meeting they had on Saturday. So I've been watching a lot of school boards lately. It was unexpected. We were able to confirm that this is at least the only time this has happened in 25 years. Possibly farther back, but we were not able to confirm that. And I think the tension that you heard in that clip was real. There was a lot of confusion evident from Dr. Hill there. And, you know, she repeatedly asked for clarification, and Board Chair Sneed ended up closing the meeting with a bang of the gavel. In the follow-up meeting on Saturday, there was not much clarity, and, you know, it was a board discussion, but CMS staff and Crystal Hill didn't participate.
Yeah, Liz.
I'm just curious, Eli, are you concerned at all that any of these meetings are Trying to get around open meetings laws, because typically anytime you have a quorum of the school board, it should be open unless they're discussing things like hiring and firing people.
Yeah, so we know that we've had this issue with many local governing bodies in terms of members, talking amongst themselves in groups that are smaller than a quorum to avoid open meetings laws. I don't know what happened before this particular meeting last week, but it was clear watching it that the budget was going to be rejected. People knew that. Everybody had their prepared statement on the board about why they were rejecting it. And, the vote about halfway through, I was texting James, the education reporter, and we were like, oh, wow, this is actually not going to pass. This is a done deal. And yeah, it was, it had been arranged.
And there are several odd things about this. First of all, the fact that she seemingly was blindsided by this rejection of the budget. And it would seem to me that the school superintendent and the head of the school board or other members of the school board would have been in touch with Crystal Hill prior to this meeting so that they could iron out their differences or give her pointers about what they'd like to see in that budget. And then there was the fact that they didn't offer any information about that budget, and still to this day, I don't think, at least publicly, have offered much information. Is Crystal Hill more enlightened today because of discussions behind the scenes than she was last week?
Well, I think we'll find out a lot more around lunchtime and this afternoon today, because they're supposed to have another at least 2-hour meeting at that point. I will say, having watched Saturday's board meeting where they talked about concerns, many of the concerns that the board members are raising continue to be really general. Stuff like, is staffing being allocated equitably? That's a really general question, especially at this point in the budget development process. And I don't know how, as staff, you take that and, say, okay, we need to change things to respond to that. There are also some interesting big picture questions about funding and school performance that, I think do relate to what we were talking about in the first segment with Tamika, that maybe we could plumb a little bit more too.
Okay, we have to take a break. We'll come back and get into some of the particulars of what was discussed and some of the concerns that were raised by members of the school board at that Saturday morning meeting over the weekend. We're here with Eli Portillo, executive editor, WFAE News, and Liz Schlemmer from WUNC. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte. As part of the middle school Think Lab curriculum, students engage in hands-on, project-based learning focused on real-world problems. Information at bischarlotte.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about education with the Teachers March last Friday and the school board meeting last week here at Charlotte-Mecklenburg, in which they rejected Crystal Hill's budget and then held an 8:30 in the morning Saturday special meeting to talk about that budget, at which Hill has asked for guidance on what they'd like her to change about the budget, which she has to resubmit on May the 12th, which is next Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, there will be a present. There's supposed to be a presentation Friday afternoon of her revised budget, I believe.
Okay.
So they're going to try to vote on it on May 12th.
So at that meeting on Saturday, I understand district staff did not participate in the discussions. Crystal Hill was part of it, but she left early. What are we to glean from that?
Well, I think there's some behind-the-board machinationing going on here, if that's a word. They noticed this as a budget workshop. It started at 8 a.m. on Saturday, and they immediately went into closed session to discuss what they said were specific personnel matters and also matters with their attorney. They came out of closed session after more than an hour, did not comment on it. Of course, personnel discussions are one of the exceptions to open records, open meetings laws, where they can have private discussions. And then they talked about the budget and their concerns for the next 2 hours without involving Hill or the other district staff in that.
So this 2 hours that they spent on Saturday talking about the budget amongst themselves or whatever they talked about in that closed session centered when they came back, the discussion centered mainly on areas of concern that board members had. Member Charlita Hatch says she wants to know if CMS will hit its academic goals with the proposed budget, and if not, how much more money it would take.
And it's a yes or no question. Are you going to hit literacy K through target based off this budget, or do you need something else to hit the target?
Right.
Yes or no. And if it's not money, that's fine. But if it is, say that.
Member Liz Monterey Duvall says the system isn't doing enough to help Hispanic students and multilingual learners catch up with their peers and wants a specific description of how much more funding the district would need for that.
I guess what I just want to know is, like, that can't be enough. So we just want to know what the gap is. Is that too much to ask?
Board Vice Chair D. Rankin was concerned that several board members asked how much money it would take to hit the district's learning goals, which he has said money cannot guarantee.
I don't know if there's a dollar amount. That's more like, to me, that's more philosophical. Like, I don't know if you just throw money. Hey, this is what we need. Money, 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 money. It's more than that to me.
But Board Chair Stephanie Sneed made clear that no more money is expected.
We're not magically coming up with more money. You know what I mean? Like, that magical thing is not happening. But that we're talking about the shifts in where the dollars go, if there are any.
So there seems to be a lot of confusion and not a lot of answers. Did they get answers to those questions, Eli?
No. I was actually, as we sat down here this morning, pulling up the budget for today's discussion on May 5th, and the discussion guide is 2 pages. It's broken into 8 sections, and, you know, it says, like, I'm going to read a little of it here. High quality core instruction. Sufficient information, yes or no. Understand gaps, yes, no, or somewhat. I mean, like I was saying earlier, that's a really general budget discussion. I don't, like, staffing allocation, do you have sufficient information, yes or no? Liz has covered a lot more of these, and I'm curious about her perspective too, but I mean, at this point in the game, like, do you understand staffing allocation is a really high-level question for the board to be digging into.
When did they expect to have the budget done? In the next few weeks? I mean, you thought it would have been passed last week. Yeah, I mean, what strikes me in listening to this tape is that it's extremely adversarial, but also very, very broad. You know, I saw in Wake County Schools, the school board was really hard on staff recently, but it was about specific allocations for special education teachers, right? Like, they're looking at line items in the budget at this point. Usually they're talking about very are we paying for this program or that program, how many of these positions can we keep. That's what I would expect school boards to be talking about this month. You know, at this point we're hoping their budgets are passed or nearly passed. So it is really striking that they're asking such broad questions that, you know, perhaps could have been asked 6 months ago.
Yeah, and that's one thing that the board has said. They've, you know, said that they didn't get enough detail for some of their questions, and they're trying to get more detail. They did ask about some specific line items, like you had Liz Monterey Duvall talking about multilingual learners there. There are also some general concerns about some smaller programs, like whether a $2.4 million emotional intelligence program, culture program is working. But a lot of it is this big picture. Like, I think that Charlita Hatch cut really encapsulated it.
If the superintendent was there but had to leave early or left early for whatever reason, who were they asking these questions of? Were they anticipating getting answers to these questions at that meeting, or were they just raising questions?
It was the latter. And I will say, you know, I don't regularly cover the school board, but I have over the last, 17 years in Charlotte, covered a lot of city, county budget discussions. And, you know, I will say it was unusual. They were just asking the questions of each other. They were kind of riffing. They were kind of just going through a list of, like, what about literacy? Are we going to hit that goal? What about, you know, pre-K teachers? Do we have enough? And they
were those questions raised. Were those questions raised of the superintendent the last week during that meeting?
No, they were not.
Okay, Liz, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, typically school board presentations are kind of a conversation between the school board and staff. I mean, we see this in a lot of other government meetings too, right? That our elected officials who are community members, they're asking for details, they're probing, not like you're saying, Eli, just kind of talking amongst each other. It's usually a conversation between staff and the board.
Yeah, and I think we will see some more of that today. I think we will see more of that Friday. But again, like you said, we're kind of in crunch time here. And in some ways, it feels like we're back to the beginning of a budget process, even though Board Chair Stephanie Sneed has repeatedly said, you know, we're close, we're not far off, we're not asking for a lot more. You know, I think the unspoken rejoinder to that is kind of like, okay, well, if it's really close and we're at the end, like, well, what are we doing here? Why has this process blown up so much? And just like pulling back big picture, where Charlita Hatch and several other board members, they asked, will CMS hit its goals with this budget? And I don't think that's a question that you can answer. And you can't just say, if we increase student spending to X amount and we hire X more teachers, like, we will close achievement gaps. So I think philosophically, that's a really, really big question.
A portion of this meeting was open to the public. I'm curious how many people showed up at 8:30 on a Saturday morning and if they were allowed to participate in any way. Did they ask questions of their own?
No, there were a few people there. There was a group of people wearing shirts for the Struggle, which is a Charlotte nonprofit. They were there, yeah, I believe, to support teacher funding. But no, it was it was really just a board member discussion.
So Dee Rankin asked about how the school's funding allotments will be impacted by falling enrollment, which we've already talked about a bit. CMS is projected to have about 139,000 students next year, down from 147,000 10 years ago. Did he get an answer to that question? Do they know the answer, or is that up to the General Assembly?
Well, what they've done so far to deal with falling enrollment and this allotments are to say, you know, they're going to hire fewer staff. I think they're going to hire about 1,800 staff versus they would normally hire 2,000 in the coming year. So, you know, they're closing some positions. They're shifting some central office support staff positions into educator positions. So that's how they're dealing with this. What I think was different in this discussion was CMS has talked about that high level. What the board was really pushing for now is they want to understand how specific allotments are going to affect specific schools and specific, art programs, extracurriculars at specific schools, and what that's going to look like.
Some of this decline in enrollment can be traced to opportunity scholarships, because those scholarships are available to every student in the state. So they can take money and go to a private education, which they will likely have to subsidize on their own. So those who are left behind are the ones who can't afford the additional money. But do we have any figures, Liz, on how these scholarships are impacting public school enrollment and or what that will mean for future funding for these schools?
So I don't remember the exact percentage, but we do know actually a majority of students who received Opportunity Scholarship vouchers already attended private schools. Certainly there are some people who are accessing them for the first time and actually switching. But they're, like, vouchers are only one piece of why schools are losing enrollment. It's kind of like three factors hitting at once, right? You've got maybe you are losing some students to the vouchers, but you're also losing kids to homeschooling. The charter school population is growing really rapidly. And then on top of all of that, there are just fewer children, right? Because of the declining birth rate. So I think that's only one piece in it. But when we look at what is the effective vouchers, it's, well, we can see that the General Assembly made that a priority to fund that before figuring out how much is left over for teachers' raises. So I think it's more of a philosophical question about priorities than actual, you know, putting a dollar amount on how many public funds have gone to vouchers. That's really hard to say.
Crystal Hill's proposed budget, which was rejected by the board last week, proposes a 3% increase in the teacher's base salary. Is there any indication, Eli, that the board is concerned that that proposed amount is either too high, unaffordable, or too low?
Well, I think that we've got to back up a second and just say, like, that comes out of the county's funds. So this is a multi-step process where the superintendent asks the board to approve her budget. The board, once they approve it, then they take that to the county. Then the county commissioners, who actually control the local taxes, they decide on the final amounts and what they're going to give. The proposed county appropriation includes, it's an additional about $9 million for local teacher supplements and another almost $10 million to match state-driven salary and benefit adjustments, assuming the state budget passes with salary increases. So it's, you know, $17, $18 million. It's not nothing. It's not a gigantic amount when you figure, you know, in the billions that the county budget will be and that the CMS budget will be. I think the board has not expressed any belief that that is too high. Several board members have said that that's too low. But again, board chair Stephanie Sneed said, we're not asking for more money. So even though they think that's too low, they have not indicated they actually want to see it go up yet.
The state budget has yet to pass, as we've said 1,000 times on this program, and the state budget includes some raises for state workers and teachers. As schools around the state list try to plan their budgets for the next year in the absence of what may or may not happen with the state budget, what kind of a quandary is that putting them in?
School CFOs are saying this is the most challenging budget that they've ever worked on, and it's because of uncertainty, right? Like, it's hard to write your whole budget when you don't know what percentage raise the state's going to give, if you have to match that locally. So it's, you know, trying to write a budget where some of your biggest line items you literally don't know. You know, you have to put kind of a range on what you think it might be.
And it's hard for schools because they don't have taxing authority here in North Carolina, which is different from some other states. And, you know, the school systems, they have to wait to see what the state's going to give them. They have to ask their county commission. They have to wait to see what the county commission agrees to. And then they have to figure it all with the enrollment allotment. So, I mean, it's kind of a Rubik's Cube for them.
So running the public schools, whether you're on the school board or whether you're the superintendent or another administrator, is not easy, and it's become more difficult in recent years because of all the things that we've talked about on this and other programs. But up until last week, the board seemed to have a good relationship with Crystal Hill, the superintendent, and then it seems that tensions have risen. Is that just because they have this ball of wax in front of them, and they just can't figure it out because of all the things we've talked about? Or is trouble brewing? And I know it's hard to project behind the scenes, but what does it look like?
You know, I have to qualify this by saying, again, I'm not an education reporter, just an imposter today and someone who watched school board meetings. But I will say, coming into this budget season, the prevailing concern or take among local political people was that this was Superintendent Crystal Hill's board, that they might be too deferential to her, that they really loved her, that they were impressed with the results she's delivered so far, test growth, all that. And then the skepticism and, I think it's fair to say, some hostility that we've even seen has really surprised political watchers here in Charlotte. And I think, you know, there's tension.
So the board is holding yet another workshop, I believe, today, what, at noon?
And then 11:30.
Okay, and then she will present her budget again on Friday with the deadline of May 12th, which is next Tuesday. Happy days. Eli Portillo from WFAE News, Liz Schlemmer from WUNC. Thank you all.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.